Verse 23. But before faith came, the apostle proceeds to explain the service which the law is to render. Previously, Paul had said that the law was given to reveal the wrath and death of God upon all sinners. Although the law kills, God brings good out of evil. He uses the law to bring life. God saw that the universal illusion of self-righteousness could not be put down in any other way but by the law. The law dispels all self-illusions. It puts the fear of God in a man. Without this fear, there can be no thirst for God's mercy. God accordingly uses the law for a hammer to break up the illusion of self-righteousness, that we should despair of our own strength and efforts at self-justification. Verse 23. But before faith came, we were kept under the law, shut up unto the faith which should afterwards be revealed. The law is a prison to those who have not as yet obtained grace. No prisoner enjoys the confinement. He hates it. If he could, he would smash the prison and find his freedom at all cost. As long as he stays in prison, he refrains from evil deeds. Not because he wants to, but because he has to. The bars and the chains restrain him. He does not regret the crime that put him in jail. On the contrary, he is mighty sore that he cannot rob and kill as before. If he could escape, he would go right back to robbing and killing. The law enforces good behavior, at least outwardly. We obey the law because if we don't, we will be punished. Our obedience is inspired by fear. We obey under duress, and we do it resentfully. Now, what kind of righteousness is this when we refrain from evil out of fear of punishment? Hence, the righteousness of the law is, at bottom, nothing but love of sin and hatred of righteousness. All the same, the law accomplishes this much, that it will outwardly, at least and to a certain extent, repress vice and crime. But the law is also a spiritual prison, a veritable hell. When the law begins to threaten a person with death and the eternal wrath of God, a man cannot find any comfort at all. He cannot shake off at will the nightmare of terror which the law stirs up in his conscience. Of this terror of the law, the Psalms furnish many glimpses. The law is a civil and a spiritual prison, and such it should be. For that the law is intended. Only the confinement in the prison of the law must not be unduly prolonged. It must come to an end. The freedom of faith must succeed the imprisonment of the law. Happy the person who knows how to utilize the law so that it serves the purposes of grace and of faith. Unbelievers are ignorant of this happy knowledge. When Cain was first shut up in the prison of the law, he felt no pang at the fratricide he had committed. He thought he could pass it off as an incident with a shrug of the shoulder. "Am I my brother's keeper?" he answered God flippantly. But when he heard the ominous words, "What hast thou done? The voice of thy brother's blood crieth unto me from the ground," Cain began to feel his imprisonment. Did he know how to get out of prison? No. He failed to call the gospel to his aid. He said, "My punishment is greater than I can bear." He could only think of the prison. He forgot that he was brought face to face with his crime so that he should hurry to God for mercy and for pardon. Cain remained in the prison of the law and despaired. As a stone prison proves a physical handicap, so the spiritual prison of the law proves a chamber of torture. But this it should only be until faith be revealed. The silly conscience must be educated to this. Talk to your conscience. Say, "Sister, you are now in jail all right, but you don't have to stay there forever. It is written that we are shut up unto faith, which should afterwards be revealed. Christ will lead you to freedom. Do not despair like Cain, Saul, or Judas. They might have gone free if they had called Christ to their aid. Just take it easy, Sister Conscience. It's good for you to be locked up for a while. It will teach you to appreciate Christ." How anybody can say that he by nature loves the law is beyond me. The law is a prison to be feared and hated. Any unconverted person who says he loves the law is a liar. He does not know what he is talking about. We love the law about as well as a murderer loves his gloomy cell, his straitjacket, and the iron bars in front of him. How then can the law justify us? Verse 23, shut up unto the faith, which should afterwards be revealed. We know that Paul has reference to the time of Christ's coming. It was then that faith and the object of faith were fully revealed. But we may apply the historical fact to our inner life. When Christ came, he abolished the law and brought liberty and life to light. This he continues to do in the hearts of the believers. The Christian has a body in whose members, as Paul says, sin dwells and wars. I take sin to mean not only the deed, but root, tree, fruit, and all. A Christian may perhaps not fall into the gross sins of murder, adultery, theft, but he is not free from impatience, complaints, hatreds, and blasphemy of God. As carnal lust is strong in a young man, in a man of full age, the desire for glory, and in an old man, covetousness, so impatience, doubt, and hatred of God often prevail in the hearts of sincere Christians. Examples of these sins may be garnered from the Psalms, Job, Jeremiah, and all the sacred scriptures. Accordingly, each Christian continues to experience in his heart times of the law and times of the gospel. The times of the law are discernible by heaviness of heart, by a lively sense of sin, and a feeling of despair brought on by the law. These periods of the law will come again and again as long as we live. To mention my own case, there are many times when I find fault with God and am impatient with him. The wrath and the judgment of God displease me. My wrath and impatience displease him. Then is the season of the law, when the flesh lusteth against the spirit, and the spirit against the flesh. The time of grace returns when the heart is enlivened by the promise of God's mercy. It soliloquizes, why art thou cast down, O my soul? And why art thou disquieted within me? Can you see nothing but law, sin, death, and hell? Is there no grace, no forgiveness, no joy, peace, life, heaven, no Christ in God? Trouble me no more, my soul. Hope in God, who has not spared his own dear Son, but has given him into death for thy sins. When the law carries things too far, say, Mr. Law, you are not the whole show. There are other and better things than you. They tell me to trust in the Lord. There is a time for the law and a time for grace. Let us study to be good timekeepers. It is not easy. Law and grace may be miles apart in essence, but in the heart they are pretty close together. In the heart, fear and trust, sin and grace, law and gospel cross paths continually. When reason hears that justification before God is obtained by grace alone, it draws the inference that the law is without value. The doctrine of the law must, therefore, be studied carefully, lest we either reject the law altogether or are tempted to attribute to the law a capacity to save. There are three ways in which the law may be abused. First, by the self-righteous hypocrites who fancy that they can be justified by the law. Secondly, by those who claim that Christian liberty exempts a Christian from the observance of the law. These, says Peter, use their liberty for a cloak of maliciousness and bring the name and the gospel of Christ into ill repute. Thirdly, the law is abused by those who do not understand that the law is meant to drive us to Christ. When the law is properly used, its value cannot be too highly appraised. It will take me to Christ every time.